It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. A very beautiful Friday morning. We're recording this. Welcome in Kyle from McGrane's Barber. What's up, man?
What's going on, dude?
You awake?
Partially.
This is Breakfast with Kyle.
Yes, this is partially. It's partially just waking up. The other part is I'm sick. So.
All right. Well, you know what? We love you, man, because this time of year, as we saw the baseball team, you're playing hurt. You're not injured, but you're playing hurt right now. So we appreciate you're a real teammate and that you're trying hard. I let the fans know that you're in there and you're really trying to win. So that's what it's all about for this podcast.
All right.
All right. And how about you, Bubba? How you feeling, man?
Doing well. It's a beautiful 60-degree morning here in Kannapolis, and it's
you're
making me
think. Right,
I'm not running. I'm walking. I'm not going to try to run and do the podcast, but we'll be running after we record. But
okay.
But yeah, it's almost like it's 4 months later, and it's early to mid October.
Yeah.
The way it feels out here,
it's got me
ready for some Pirate football and a winning record going into October.
Yeah, this weather's been fantastic the last few days.
I love it. Yeah, it's been perfect. And hey, Kyle, I want to bring you in and Bubba because. We've got a great show. That's my adjective for today for you. Kyle loves all my adjectives, my superlatives for how great the show is going to be or how it's going to turn out. But we have two great guests, don't we, Bubba, before we get started with our roundtable?
We do. We're going to catch up with Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South and Saturday Tradition. He covers the SEC and the Big Ten. He's a 2012 Indiana alum, so it's awfully fun catching up with him, talking some football. And then we also caught off with Curtis Thiemann. Curtis is with Port City Films, and Curtis was on the show last September, right after opening weekend, talking about the intro video that was called Enter the Pirate, and that was a very big hit. So we're going to see what's in store this year, not only for the intro, but maybe other things.
That's right. We got some breaking news. I'll just go ahead and say it. So you got to listen to this podcast, and you'll be we're the first to break some news on there. So I'll just say that. That's called a tease in our business. But we're not going to tease you about the roundtable. I just want to say, guys, Kyle, you follow football closely. So do you, Bubba. Huge weekend for the Pirates. A lot of big names coming in for recruiting purposes. And we're all to, as we said in a previous podcast, we're all to a great start. I think our last one, we have six great commits, and I don't know how many. We don't have to get a numbers game of how many we need for this year, but I know before we start this podcast, Kyle, we need more than six, right?
Correct, yeah. I don't know how many we can find this year, but certainly more than six, but it's a good start.
That's not a good sign. If this group can only sign six players, we're in deep trouble. I know that's not the case.
And then we have a basketball class that has 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah, and, no, but it's off to a good start. The latest commitment, the kid from Maryland, the offensive line, was offensive lineman, correct?
As a guard?
Yeah. Isaiah Foote, offensive lineman from Virginia. And that's
from Maryland,
the thing. I'm sorry?
I believe he's from Maryland.
Yeah, it was from Calvert Hall High School. Maybe he was from Maryland. I'm mixing him. You're correct. I was mixing him up with one of the previous that was from the state of Virginia, but that's one of the things that really stands out, the way this class is spread out thus far, even though it's only six people. You have two from North Carolina and then one from Maryland, one from South Carolina, one from Virginia, and one from New Jersey.
Well, this sounds, Kyle, I wanted to mention that this coaching staff that we have now are tremendous recruiters, and they've got thousands of high schools that they can call on, and it just goes to show you that, well, it's great to recruit. As everybody knows, I never say just to recruit Eastern North Carolina. We're getting the cream of the crop of Eastern North Carolina and North Carolina. The beautiful thing is we're not just relying on the state of North Carolina.
No, but, and even though Donnie Kay and Steve Shankweiler obviously have ties to this area, they've been away from the area for a couple of years. So whenever you come back, you got to make ties again. And you got to make relationships, with kids. And typically you're recruiting a kid a year or so at least before he signs. And, And so you got some situations with kids from Maryland, Jersey, and of course Virginia, where some kids might have been being recruited by these guys when they were at JMU. And obviously, you know, ties to these schools, you know, Virginia, or excuse me, JMU being in Northern Virginia, they, you know, I'm sure recruited Maryland and Jersey a lot. So, you know, and that's, to me, you get up North Carolina, obviously South Carolina and Virginia, but to me, Maryland and even Jersey is kind of our footprint. It should be anyway. So
we get some players from Pennsylvania too and Ohio.
Right, yeah. But yeah, I like getting kids from up north like that. We used to do it a lot under Logan and Lewis. So I like it. And the kid from Maryland in particular who we're talking about, the latest commit, had some good offers. Had an offer from Temple. Had an offer from Buffalo, which might not sound like much, but Buffalo's been playing good football
the
last couple of years. So
and basketball.
Yeah, they have. So far, so good with the recruiting class.
I'm very excited about it. And hey, by the way, two more things. Speaking of recruiting across the board, I'm still surprised we're talking about recruiting in basketball. But as far as basketball goes, Bubba, my understanding, and Kyle, I just realized I haven't had a chance to tell you, but it's looking like that this coming week, if that's the case, that it happens, we will be there. But Joe Dooley is supposed to call a press conference to introduce the new 11 players that we have. So we'll see about it. It's supposed to be on Thursday the 20th. That's what I've heard from Hoist the Colors on there, on message boards, and other people have been talking to me. So we'll see if that happens. If it does, we'll be there, and that'll probably be a podcast in itself next week. It's supposed to be next Thursday the 20th, so let's see if that happens.
Yeah, I certainly wish I was close enough to be able to attend that, but definitely look forward to hearing what Coach Dooley and staff have to say about these young men.
And by the way, Kyle, too, Bubba, I don't know if you guys saw with, speaking of Steven Igo with Hoist the Colors, Cliff's got a brand new group is coming in of people he signed for this new class. Very excited. Looks like they've got a really good class of freshmen coming in, and the JUCOs are coming in.
Yeah, with the way Cliff is running this program, I mean, with the on-field success we've had, the off-field success we've referenced with academics and community service, I mean, just the total package that East Carolina baseball has to sell and the way Cliff has recruited in the past, you fully expect that to be the case going forward. And like when we talked to Trey Daly here a few weeks ago, so if you missed that conversation, that's still all current information. Go back and check that out. That podcast received a great response, and Trey has some excellent information. It's a lot of these incoming guys are dirtbags.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They're dirtbags. but anyway, that's not an insult for people that don't know. That's the name of the team. So, so recruiting-wise for the Big Three sports and the signees and everything, looking really good. Very excited about that. Guys, overall, I'm just pumped up about this football season. I don't know about you guys, but it just usually it's at least July, and that's when I really. But I think knowing with Houston that he was coming in, knowing what they've done, I think it's moved back to for me even more excitement at during spring practice and then the spring game. I've been excited about this football season way back.
Typically speaking, not so much the last couple of years under Scotty Moe, but typically speaking, around May or June, around the time the magazines start coming out, I start getting the itch and start getting excited for football. And I'm already ready. Yeah, I got an itch. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I might need to go
see the doctor.
Yeah, I could. You know, there's a cure. The itch is called purple fever, and the only cure is pirate football.
All right.
That's an old. You guys remember that? You guys remember that promotion?
I don't know.
Under the JT years, Scott, it was
cool. Okay.
but,
got an itch.
Yeah, no way. We got a fever. It's purple fever, and the only cure is pirate football. Anyway, but yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready for football. I'm excited. I'm fired up. Looking forward to it. Obviously, to get the Montgomery stank off, and looking forward to seeing what Mike Houston can do in the staff in year one. What's going to be a build. And, I do expect this to be a whole lot better this year and just excited and looking forward to it and all those other things.
And you know what? It's kind of like, I know Fontel Mons, growing pains on, I know he tweeted out, which is true. People expect, for things to happen overnight. We live in that kind of society, unfortunately, instant gratification, a Pop-Tart society. But basically what he was saying is, you know, you've got like that, you got to go through the growing pains first. But the good news is I think we're going to see a lot of progress. And if this team, we've said 100 times, well, this team could just be 500, where we're maybe potentially bowl eligible, or 7 wins we definitely would be. That would be like an undefeated season for us this year, considering what we've been through.
Yeah, it would feel great to be 500 or above after what we've been through. It would be a huge step in the right direction. I do think, you know, as we know, the schedule is favorable for that, non-conference wise. There's some wins out there to be had. If we're an improved football team, you know, if we're 50% better than we were last year across the board, then we'll challenge for 6 wins.
Do you want to go to our first guest, Bubba?
Yeah, first let's catch up with Curtis Steeman. And Curtis, like we said, is from Port City Films. He's a 2005 ECU alum, and we're going to get the lowdown on the 2019 ECU football intro video and so much more. Let's go to that interview right now with Curtis.
Well, everybody wants to be a movie star, and down in the great city of Wilmy Wood and the Port City, I know, Bubba, we got a very special guest. Glad to have him back on the podcast.
Yeah, the intro video last year for East Carolina football, a video that was known as Enter the Pirates, a huge success. It won an award, and to talk about that, we're very excited to have back on the show Curtis Steeman from Port City Films. Curtis, welcome in.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back on.
Absolutely. We definitely want to have you back on, and again, congratulations on the award. Can you tell everybody what the award is and how you got it?
Yeah, so what we did was, it's called the Telly Award, we submitted as non-traditional media because it wasn't something that airs on TV or what was meant for online, so we were in that batch, and we won a silver, which is, in our 14 years of making videos, it's our third time bringing home a silver on a project, so it was exciting to get that. I thought we had a good chance, which is why I submitted it. But, we got that, and the trophies are in the mail.
All right, that's awesome. And for those that may not remember, you're a graduate of East Carolina. You graduated in 2005, right?
Yeah, I graduated in 2005 and moved straight to Wilmington and have been producing videos ever since. And finally got to do the ECU entrance video, and some people seem to like it. So we're happy and honored to be a part of that.
And Curtis, speaking of people liking it, what kind of feedback did you get from Pirate Nation? Did you hear a lot from the fans about liking the video? Because to me, last year, for the most part, it was about the highlight of the game.
Yeah, we got really good feedback. There's always... there's always people who are not going to like things, and there were a few people that I came across online who were saying they kind of prefer the animations or they don't know what the big deal is about. But that was about the harshest that I saw. I actually did something you should never do as a filmmaker, and I was digging for trolls. I was looking for the people that hated it and wanted to pick it apart, and I'm sure they were out there. I just didn't find them. By and large, people really, they really liked it. They got what we were going for, and it was really cool to see the reaction and have people tell me, like, what their favorite part is, like if it's the pirate smiling when he turns around or, the state
light
of
it on fire.
lighten it up. I mean, so there were, almost everybody I talked to had really good things to say about it, I tell them that was our first shot at it. And we're excited to take another.
Very excited to hear about that. I was concerned if, even though the great reaction I got, you always wonder if ECU alma mater and our alma mater would go back again. You know, they said, well, should we do somebody else or whatever? So I was glad to hear that you guys get a second crack. Can you give us any kind of details? I know you don't want to give it away, but is there anything you can tell us besides it's going to play at the September 7th, the Gardner Webb at 6 o'clock?
Well, yeah, I can tell you there's going to be, it's going to be a different video. There's going to be, we're keeping some of the same pieces, but I can tell you it's going to be different. We're re-editing it. We're shooting new player stuff. So it's going to have a whole different feel. It's going to have a whole different energy. But you know, people will recognize some of the key pirate scenes. But we're picking up some new pieces too. So it's one of those things that obviously I'm going to keep that close to the vest. But we also just got officially brought on to make a new video for ECU football. A video that will play at the beginning of the fourth quarter. So
awesome.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, for the no quarter.
It's the no quarter video, and I think you guys have that exclusive. I don't think anybody else knows about it yet.
All right.
Curtis, I have a idea for you. Kyle is a great actor. He makes a great Jack Sparrow. Pirate outfit, yeah. And get him.
I'd be the fattest Jack Sparrow you've ever seen in your life. I look like I hate Johnny Depp.
Well, bring it on.
I was going to ask you, Curtis. You indicated by the intro video that we're going to be reusing, or you're going to be reusing the video from last year, and it sounds like adding to it, and editing it, rather than shooting something completely new.
Right.
Okay. And then, can you tell us anything about the no quarter video? Do you have an idea what you want to do for that, or you still?
Yeah. So we've been scouting locations. We've got our location. I don't want to specify that just yet because the ink's we don't have anything in writing yet. But I will tell you that we're going to shoot it live action. It's not going to be an animation. And we're working on shooting it on a ship. So that way we've got as realistic as a set as we can get, and we want to make it as rough and tumble as our entrance was last year. So we're excited to get underway. We'll be shooting that and what's the new parts of the entrance video in July.
Okay. Curtis, as you've gone through this process, our new head coach, Mike Houston, is very well known for his pregame speeches that he gave at James Madison. Have those come up at all? Like, for instance, there was one where he's talking about he had a key in his hand, and he said, "And this right here is the key to the front gate of the damn stadium." So,
yep.
So have those speeches come up at all in incorporating Coach Houston?
So I actually I met with Coach Houston, and we spent a little time together. He gave me a tour around the new facilities, and we talked a lot about what he wants his message to be. I want to say things without saying things, but we want to bring the spirit of this program, Mike Houston's football program, into the video. And we want to make sure it's clear that this is a whole new thing. It's a whole new era. And I'll tell you, meeting him face to face and spending 30 minutes with him, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an intense
question about it.
Yeah.
No question about it.
No doubt.
He reminds me of Coach Buzzcut from Beavis and Butthead. So, In appearance only.
I'll tell you, just his passion and attention to detail are just really refreshing, and he really understood what we wanted to do. He really saw that we were on the same page, and I'm really excited to get underway and have a, like I said, it's going to be a whole different feel. It's going to be a whole different thing, but we're really excited to knock it out for him.
Go ahead, Dave.
I just had a sidebar question for you, and then we'll get back to the Pirates, being that you're a filmmaker. Not to talk about the actual bill or anything, but I want to get your feel on, I know there's your fellow filmmakers in Georgia maybe going through a tough time because of the abortion bill, and there's talk of the ban. Can you talk about, is that going to help you guys in North Carolina? Unfortunately, I know there's been down in Wilmington because of the incentives and all that, or lack thereof, in the past. I think it's gotten a little bit better under Governor Cooper and the legislature, but can you talk a little bit about that? I just want to get your take because I love film, and I'm hoping that we can get more films in North Carolina.
Sure, sure. Yeah, when they did away with the incentive, it was a big hit. A lot of things went to Georgia and South Carolina. We've got a grant now, and they've expanded it a little bit. So there's a little bit more activity on that front. It's interesting to see what's going on in Georgia. It would be amazing if they turn their back on an industry that's so ingrained in, especially in the Atlanta area. But it'll be interesting to see if people do start pulling out of Atlanta. I think North Carolina will definitely get a boost. I don't want to say that I hope that happens, because it's just the whole thing's unfortunate and ridiculous. But I just think that it's sad that we lost what we lost here in North Carolina, and it's we're getting a little bit of it back, and hopefully that trend continues, because there's so much talent here. There's so many great professionals here, and they just want to work and tell stories.
No doubt about it. It's a great. I love Wilmington. I love the area, and certainly I hope that we can get more stuff. And not necessarily from. And another great thing about North Carolina, it doesn't necessarily have to be stuff that's being filmed in Georgia or South Carolina, Louisiana, wherever. It could be new stuff, right? New projects to come to North Carolina.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Curtis, what else do you guys do at Port City Films? I mean, besides make films for East Carolina, obviously. You've got to be doing other things.
I sit around all year waiting to make my ECU videos.
Wow.
We make videos for, we've got a variety of clients, mostly like corporate videos, higher end commercials. We work on TV and film projects some, but our base is really in the corporate world. We travel all over the U.S. making videos for people, and that's about it. We do some original content. We pitched a TV show two years ago now. And, so we're going to continue to do some of that, but for the most part, just sticking with our clients and traveling around, making whatever we can.
In fact, the backstory that's really cool is, as far as you making the intro to the video, is, in fact, the late, great Kim Reeves, the wife of Brian Medor, she's the one that got you in contact with Brian, right?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Kim was a friend, and I worked with her, and I still work with the High Street Yale Group based out of Greenville. And one night she asked me if I have any connections with people who make sports videos. And I hadn't met Brian at that point, but I knew of him. And I just told her, I was like, Kim, if this has anything to do with ECU football, then I need to know that right now. And she just messaged me back, you need to talk with Brian. so the rest was history. When I met him, we're the same person. So, he instantly got my passion. He got the vision, and Brian's the person who really just got in there and got me in front of the right people and made it happen. And he's been such a great person to work with, and now a great friend.
Now, Curtis, I know there's nothing more that you can divulge as far as the content of the videos, but and I know when we talked to you back in September after last year's video was unveiled against North Carolina A&T, so you talked about how that process it was kind of sped up, how you had to do it in 6 weeks as opposed to 2 months.
Right.
Now, this year, being that you're just editing and then adding some things in and what have you, but you are a new no quarter video. So can you talk about the process? I know there was 4 days of shooting last year.
Yeah. This year we're probably going to have about 2.5 days. It's something that I feel better about, because we're not going to be doing as much on the VFX side. So we're going to be shooting a lot of practical. I mean, we're going to be doing a little bit of that, but most of what we're going to be doing is more practical, which means just not as much computer animation. There's not, you know, we're not putting storms out the window of a pirate ship. We're not doing, you know, the players on the beach were CGI'd in the background. The you know, the fire overhead shot, that was CG. The close-up shots were real fire on the beach, but so there's not as much there. We'll be shooting in July, and I feel pretty good about our timeline because I can control what's in front of it now. Last time they contacted me, I already had projects booked, and we just had to kind of work around stuff, and it was really it was really intensive. So, I mean, I think we finished it really with about 4 or 5 days before kickoff. So, it was one of those things that we knew it was going to be close, and we knew we could, we thought we could do it. So, it turns out we could, and that's good. And I was just hoping that we'd get called back to do it again. You know, whenever you have a new administration and you have new people, you know, we have the new coach, we've got just a lot of new people at the top there. You just worry that they're going to say, oh, we need new blood. And I'd be waving my arms like, wait, where are the new blood?
Yeah, it's very exciting. The video, can you talk about, like, I know you can't give every single detail, not about the video, but can you talk about the process of what you guys, I know you're not starting from scratch, but can you talk about what, I know you said it's going to be like 2.5 days of shooting, but how many hours is that?
So we're going to be shooting. We're going to be doing night shoots for both, the players and the no quarter video. So, we're probably going to be about 8 hour shoots. And then we're going to do a couple pickups in the studio, that I can't really go more into detail on, but
okay, that's fine.
The I will say this: the no quarter video. Obviously, we all know the general story of what that entails, but it's going to be different. We're completely rewriting it. It's going to be a whole different thing, and it's going to be hopefully really cool and really exciting.
Can you talk about how many people are on the project as far as helping you out?
I'm still in the process of putting together our crew. It looks like we're going to have the same director of photography as we had for the original entrance, which is great. He's a good friend of mine here in Wilmington. I think we're going to have most of the crew and the equipment that we had last time. I can say that in the no quarter video, we're looking to have multiple people as talents, so it's not just going to be the pirate on the ship. Yes, that's about all I've got for you.
All right. So Kyle may
the pirate will have a crew.
Maybe Kyle will be part of the crew.
That would be awesome. I would pay money for that. For sure. I know one thing, filmmaking is not easy. I had a chance to be a part of a film and spent
that day, long. We don't need to talk about that.
No, it's not one of your films, Kyle. I was up for, it was shot in Raleigh. I was up 38 hours straight between all the downtime, the uptime, and basically the only time I had off was to go to work, literally. So it was not easy. It was free. Oh, we got free food. That was our payment, but it was an interesting process, and I have a deeper respect for you guys in the film industry.
Oh yeah, no, it is a process. You know, almost everybody we had on set for our Enter the Pirate is a film professional. They're people that work in the industry. They're people that work on the films and the shows that come through. So when you put those people in a room, man, it's fun to watch because. It's not us having to run around and wear a bunch of hats. You've got people that just they live and breathe that role. So when you put them all in the same place, man, it all comes together. And we had such a good team, and that's why the video was so good. We really put together like an all-star team of like my favorite people to work with in town, and they all loved it. Everybody had such a good time, and they've had so many people. come up to them when they mentioned what they worked on and surprise them by saying, oh my God, that was such a great video. And they're like, oh, you saw that? And they're like, yeah, I mean, because we're in Eastern North Carolina. There's Pirate fans everywhere. And just the reaction was great. And watch them experience that was fun because they don't really have a tie to the school, or they didn't before that.
Curtis, I know you said it's nice that John Gilbert and the new administration obviously chose to go with you guys again at Port City Films. But that's why I know Jonathan Medford, he was a producer for last year's Enter the Pirate. In addition to Jonathan, because I know he's an alum, were there any other Pirates? Because it's nice to see Pirates doing business with Pirates.
Yeah, for sure. Jonathan's my business partner, so Jonathan will be on this. Actually, Jonathan and his wife made the E.B. Warren sign in the first video. They made that from scratch. So now that sits in my home office. But, yeah, John's going to be working with us on this. There are a couple other Pirates in town who work at different production companies, and they're friends, and they said if I do anything again to tell them. So I'll probably have them out. There was kind of a funny story that happened during Enter the Pirate. There was a local filmmaker who's very talented, and we've talked about working together, and we hadn't been able to work together, and he was a big NC State fan. So I told him I had a project, and I wanted to work with him, and he was like, yes. Let's do it. What is it? I go, show up at my studio. Here's the time. Here's the date. Just, I'll show you what we're doing when you get here. And he showed up and he walked in. He was like, oh, this is cool. What is it? And I was like, this is the inside of a pirate ship. We're making the ECU entrance video. And he, you know, he just, he lost it. But you know, he thought it was funny and he was still on board. And he had a blast. So it was really fun working with him. And we did have one State fan on set. But he was outnumbered greatly.
So it was Jonathan Medford that was responsible. I know you said for the E.B. Warren sign for the Rams skull being on the E.B. Warren sign, because that was a nice touch.
Well, that was actually my idea. That was in the original storyboard that night that Kim messaged me. I storyboarded it, and I was like, and in our original pitch a couple years ago when they actually turned us down, I said, you know, the one caveat is there will be a Ram skull in this video or I will not make it. And they laughed and then they looked at me and they saw that I wasn't laughing. So when I got to make it, a Tar Heel skull went in it. And next year there might be another little Easter egg.
Well, Curtis, we certainly appreciate your time. I really appreciate you coming back on the show. And I can't wait to see here in 2.5 months for the season, not season opener, the home opener against Gardner-Webb on September 7th, what we have headed our way. And I know Pirate Nation will not be disappointed, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, thank you guys for what you do, and yeah. Appreciate you having us on. And, you know, we'll keep you updated as soon as we can.
All right, thank you, Curtis. Appreciate you very much, man.
All right, go Pirates. Take care, guys.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you very much, Curtis. How about that, guys? Some breaking news. How'd you feel about that?
Sounds, you know, I look forward to see what he's going to do with the No Quarter video. Loved his intro video last year. It was fantastic. It really was probably the best part of the football game.
It was. Twice. So, yeah. We had it twice.
So the No Quarter video, you know, looking forward to seeing what he's going to do with it. It's cool that he broke it on our podcast. Exciting stuff, and you know, looking forward to seeing it. We won't see it until September. The first home game of September. They'll give us a preview of Meet the Pirates, at least on the intro video. We'll see.
That'll be cool.
Yeah,
we'll see. Yeah,
certainly look forward to the No Quarter video playing in there. Being people in the stands and not being down 4 or 5 touchdowns. And I look forward to what he was saying as far as it not being animated. I think that will be really cool with it being more like the intro video.
Yeah, the animation was cool. I love that under Terry Holland. It was certainly better than anything we did under Pomfer or Benninger. But the animation was starting to look a little dated. So, to see the live action stuff will be cool.
Yeah, well, now we're get a chance to see that, and it won't be long, guys. It will be right around the corner for sure. All right, speaking of the which, with football being around the corner, Bubba, I know we got our next guest is awesome.
Yeah, it's a very popular website, SaturdayDownSouth.com, and also SaturdayTradition.com. A senior writer for those websites. He's been writing for them now for 4 or 5 years. Also the Big Ten alum as he went to Indiana, and also covered in the Nebraska Cornhuskers back a few years ago. So let's catch up with Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South and Saturday Tradition.
Bob, I know we have a very special guest on the line. It's never too early to talk about football, right?
No, it's the middle of June, still another 2.5 months of the season. But with the excitement for the coming season, as you say, we're very excited to have with us Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South and Saturday Tradition. He also hosts the Saturday Down South podcast. And Connor, welcome into the show.
Hey, appreciate you guys having me. I mean, 2.5 months is a long time. Can we just get this thing started already?
Exactly, Connor. Thank you for coming on. I think the guys with it being in East Carolina, we talk football 24/7, 365, so we'll be glad to do that anytime. Wanted to, I know that you cover both the Big Ten and SEC, and the Big Ten is more like your home, even though I know you're in Orlando, but can you talk about the conference itself? And there's a lot of question marks and storylines going into 2019.
Yeah, it's a weird time in the conference right now, just with this first year of the post-Urban Meyer era. It's a strange time because I think that people kind of look around the conference and, you know, you look at somebody like James Franklin, who I'm not as high on, and I've, you know, kind of lost a little bit of faith in him just based on some of his in-game decision-making and just how much he struggled really against top 25 teams. And you kind of look and say, well, the conference is now more up for grabs than it's ever been, and who's going to be the team that's going to make that next step? Is it going to be a team like, you know, Wisconsin that returns to what we're used to seeing but is coming off a disappointing year? It's going to be Michigan State, a team that, again, coming off a disappointing year but has shown that upside with Mark D'Antonio in the playoff era. Who is going to make that step? Or maybe it's somebody that we're not even paying attention to right now, a team like Purdue, a team like Minnesota that, you know, has these coaches that are on the rise and just so hungry for that big national stage type season. So I think it's super interesting, and I think that it all kind of leads into my belief that I think it's going to be a wild year in the conference. I think we're going to have a lot more of these Purdue, Ohio State type games where it's going to be really tough to predict from week to week. I'm doing a current ranking of coaches right now nationally, and I have all these Big Ten coaches just kind of grouped together. There's probably about six of them that I think are super, super close right now, depending on what metric you want to look at. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting now that Urban Meyer has moved on, and, you know, there's no guarantee that Ryan Day is going to pick up exactly where he left off, especially with recruiting stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I think we've got a lot of interesting storylines ahead, and, you know, can this be the year that Jim Harbaugh takes the next step? Who knows? But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of what shakes out.
That was one of the questions I had for you. So since you mentioned the name with Jim Harbaugh, I think he's a fantastic coach. I was telling Bubba, he may be the case study as far as going back to your alma mater as a coach at the high school level. People always thought, yeah, wouldn't you like to go back and coach your alma mater? And I said, no way. I put too much pressure on yourself. And I'm wondering, is that the case? Is the expectations too high at Michigan, or is it that he's putting too much pressure? Sometimes even though it's your alma mater, it's not the perfect fit.
Right, and you know, you can make any argument that you want with Harbaugh at this point. If you want to do the negative spin, I mean, you'll just point to his record against Ohio State. You'll say he hasn't been to a Big Ten championship yet. He's overrated, and I get all that. Look, I mean, let's be honest. If nobody expected Harbaugh going into year five to still be searching for his first division title, I mean, I think that we all expected him to have a Big Ten championship by now, to have at least one win against Ohio State. There's nothing wrong with saying that. At the same time, let's not pretend like the guy just walked into a perfectly made situation and this was going to be, you know, national championship or bust year in, year out. I mean, he has had that team ranked in 43 of the 48 games. That's 90% of the games that they played. And he took over a 5-win team, and he's won double-digit games in 3 of 4 seasons. I think their floor is what we saw from them in that 2017 year where they really struggled at the quarterback position, even though they had such a dominant defense. And, you know, the bookends of their season have just been, you know, the bookend of their season last year was just so bizarre that it kind of made you forget that they had a double-digit winning streak. I mean, that is really hard to do in Power 5, especially with the 9-game conference schedule. So, you know, I'm still of the belief that Harbaugh is, you know, a guy that is capable of getting that program in a much better place than it's been in the post-Lloyd Carr era. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, I think in order for him to kind of back up what we thought he was capable of, this is the perfect opportunity for him to make that next step, for him to be able to beat Ohio State, for him to be able to get to a Big Ten championship and just kind of, you know, back off this belief that it's been a little bit more talk than substance, you know, during his time in Michigan. But I guess I'm more in the pro-Harbaugh camp than the anti-Harbaugh camp.
And also adding to that, since the two conferences you cover, the Big Ten and SEC, the teams, I was telling Bubba, I think the bottom tier teams have improved where they're at least a bowl game. Like you think of Purdue, who would have ever thought that their program would be in a really good shape. There are a lot of teams like that maybe it was like Wisconsin and everybody else in the Big Ten West, and now there's other teams that are emerging where they were not good to where they're at least where they're having a winning season going to a bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's like what Harbaugh has kind of gone through and what we've seen in the Big Ten the last few years. In my opinion, the 9-game conference schedule is tougher, and there's a reason that the Big Ten has struggled so much to get to the playoff because of it, and the fact that the ACC and the SEC are the only two conferences that have been to a playoff berth, that have had a playoff berth every single year. It's not a coincidence that they're the conferences with the 8-game conference schedule. So, you know, that is part of it, and there are just more chances to trip up, and it's not like Michigan has had these like bad seasons. I mean, I think that, you know, you look at a Power 5 schedule, and there are just so many different chances in which you could not have your best day, and a team can get you. I mean, even Clemson in 2017, you know, in 2016, they had these absolute dud losses, and you're kind of scratching your head like, wait, I thought you were supposed to be upset-proof. I thought you were supposed to be competing for a national championship, but it happens. These are 18- to 22-year-olds, and we need to kind of keep that all in context. And when, you know, the bottom of the conference does get better, there are just that much more – there are that many more opportunities for a team – you know, like Michigan, like Alabama, Clemson, to slip up. And I think that, you know, Michigan has just kind of been, you know, in the crosshairs of some of those, and Ohio State as well.
And, Connor, when you take a look at Jim Harbaugh, kind of analogy or comparison that I told Dave prior to us starting this interview, when you look at Harbaugh, he's kind of like John Cooper was at Ohio State back in the 1990s, where he won an awful lot of football games, but hardly any of them came against Michigan.
Right, exactly, and that's going to be the thing that's going to hold him back. And he knows that. Let's not pretend like, you know, Jim Harbaugh, to his credit, one of the quieter national storylines this offseason has been the fact that he has turned over his offense entirely to Josh Gattis. He has given a guy who has never called plays before entire control of the offense and said, hey, look, what I'm doing isn't working. The times have gotten ahead of me, and Urban Meyer did this a little bit too towards his later days, where he just said, you know what, I'm going to oversee the whole thing. I'll be part of the game planning, obviously all that. But from a play-calling standpoint, I need to just kind of back out of the way and look a little bit more big picture with this, because it ain't working. And if you're at that point now where you just can't beat those elite teams, you've got to figure out a way to do that, because right now Michigan obviously has that ceiling. And, you know, like a John Cooper, if you're going into a season thinking that there's only so much you can do with this offense, then that is so deflating for a fan base when you just can't get to that next level, and they start to wonder if they can find somebody who can. So, you know, I'm of the belief that this is going to be a positive move for Harbaugh. I love Josh Gattis. I think he's going to be one of the great, you know, rising coaches in this profession. Wouldn't be surprised if he had a Power 5 head coaching job in the next few years, but you know, a lot remains to be seen as to how this is going to work. And I at least give Jim Harbaugh credit for realizing that he needed to do something different.
And it looks like from the outside looking in, I'm a guy in North Carolina, so I'm not in Michigan, but it seems like the fan base with their expectations, and I understand being Big Blue, it seems like their patience is wearing thin. And like you described, I mean, you take a situation like Harbaugh, he's one of the best coaches. And I was telling Bubba, it's kind of ironic because hypothetically speaking, if he has a bad season or a mediocre season and they fire him this year, I'm not advocating for that, But if they do, he could go to somewhere else, and all of a sudden he's winning a whole bunch of games and championships. I don't know. It just seems like something's not quite right there. And I don't know if it's the fan base or what's going on there. But it's just disappointing because I'm actually a fan of Jim Harbaugh, to be honest. I think he's a great coach.
Yeah, I mean, I don't buy into the belief that he's on the hot seat, because I think what we tend to do with these things is we dismiss the AD coach relationship, which is really all that matters when it comes to this, because the AD is the one who makes that decision. And Ward Emanuel loves Jim Harbaugh. I mean, loves him. To think that you know, he's going to pull the trigger and fire him after he loses again to Ohio State or something like that, to me is a little bit ridiculous. You know, if you're looking at this as a make-or-break year for whether or not he's going to be around in 2020, I would say that's going a bit too far. I think Ward Emanuel has a lot of trust, a lot of patience in Harbaugh, and he knew that, you know, this thing was going to take a little bit of time, even though he won big early and he got off to such a great start in 2015 and had that turnaround year where he doubled Michigan's win total. I think in order for him to get to the place where he needs to be, you know, he needs to have some trust in this and have some trust in this move. And even though Ward Emanuel wasn't necessarily the guy who hired Jim Harbaugh, that relationship is still really, really strong. And there have been zero indications that he's losing faith in Harbaugh. I think it's going to take, you know, one of those years where he gets over the hump for everybody to kind of back off that stance and say, all right, this guy is going to be here as long as he wants to be here, which, in my opinion, I don't think he's going back to the NFL any time in the very near future unless something happens, something, you know, off the field or, you know, that relationship sours. But there's been no indication of that so far.
Go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to mention for both conferences you cover, I noticed that 24/7 CBS Sports, they had a predictions, and I know it's early and it's everybody's guess right now, but interesting one they had for me that I love the coach because he was an American and now it is all modern Nebraska, but they had Scott Frost and they have the prediction of 11-1. And I just want to get your thoughts on that, because I thought that was a little strong. I think he's a great coach, but 11-1, I thought, I know that he's building something. He's a great coach, but I was just kind of shocked by that.
11-1. Wow. I have not seen that yet. No, if Nebraska were to go 11-1, I would be willing to make some sort of wager about walking from here to Wood River, Nebraska, where Scott Frost is from. It's funny, we've kind of followed a similar path in a weird way. Like, I used to live 20 minutes from his hometown in Nebraska. I spent 2.5 years out there, and then I came down to Orlando, and he followed me down here, obviously. But no, now that he's back in Lincoln, everybody is extremely fired up just because of the way that they finished the season. And I knew the hype train was going to take off if he had a finish like he did, because, you know, you really look at the last six games and, you know, they went 4-2 and they lost two games by one possession to teams that finished in the AP top 25, and those games were both away from home. So, you know, I think that if you're a Nebraska fan right now, I would still be a little bit worried about what the defense is going to be able to do, right? I mean, that's never been Scott Frost's forte. Even when they had that turnaround at UCF, the defense was still a big liability. And I think that right now you're excited about what you have coming back in Adrian Martinez. I think he's one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the country, and I think that he could be in the Heisman conversation if he makes some of those steps this year. But at the same time, 11-1 is lofty, and I think the division has gotten better. Like we talked about, some of those bottom feeder teams in the division have risen a little bit in recent memory, and I think going 11-1 is such a tall ask. And, you know, if Nebraska finishes with a top 20 season, in my opinion, that would be a victory. But, yeah, I don't see the conference championship or, you know, division championship happening just so soon in the Scott Frost era.
Connor, something I was going to bring up about the Big Ten West, Jeff Brom returning to Purdue, turning down his alma mater in Louisville. So that was something that I know Boilermakers fans had to be extremely ecstatic about.
Yeah, I was surprised. I really was. Everything that I had heard had been the only job that he's going to leave for this early at his time at Purdue would be Louisville. And I think he just kind of looked at that situation and thought, why do I want to go into that? You know, I could come back to Purdue, I could win, you know, look at the praise that the guy's been getting for, you know, 6-7 win seasons. And, you know, you can come back and know you're going to have Rondell Moore for the next 2 years, a guy who is going to be a preseason All-American, is going to be possibly even in the Heisman conversation, depending on what he's able to do from a production standpoint in year two. But, you know, I think he just looked at that situation and thought, I got a pretty good thing going here, and I could play in a division that, you know, is relatively up for grabs right now. And, you know, you've seen the upside with what his team can do. The game against Ohio State last year just shed a lot of light into the belief that he can make this thing go. It's just going to be the consistency. Right now, he's still struggling with that from a week-to-week basis. And I think last year, you know, they were super inexperienced. And I think that at times that really came out. You know, you can't lay eggs against teams like Rutgers, and you need to be able to, you know, I know they were still able to pull away, but, you know, you need to be able to kind of beat the teams that you're supposed to, and I think right now that's what he's still working towards. But, yeah, if I'm a Purdue fan, I am stoked, because I think he's an exceptional coach, and I think that the bigger Power 5 programs are going to continue to come calling as long as he continues to keep winning there.
And one interesting thing I was just going to add to that is the very fact that with Louisville, it's more of a, let's be honest, a basketball school. They're doing a nice run now in the College World Series, starting there this week as we're recording this. But as far as football is concerned, I really believe that the job is a better job. And I know the Louisville fans will get mad for me for saying this, but I think right now Purdue, as far as football, is a better job, don't you? With the money, that the TV money for the Big Ten, and certainly with, he's like a big fish in a small, I hate to use that, that analogy, but a cliche, but a big fish in a small pond.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he's the third highest paid coach in the Big Ten now. I mean, that's what that Big Ten, you know, TV revenue can do for you. And I think that Purdue fans have a reason to come to the stadium now. I haven't looked at the attendance numbers over the last 2 years, but man, they've got to be just off the chart, because during the Darryl Hazel era, attendance there was disastrous. It was awful to watch. And, you know, there was no reason to show up to that stadium to watch that team play in a game on Saturday. And now with all the trick plays that he runs, like, that dude is fun. And I think that he's so great for college football. And even if he's not, you know, winning a division title or something like that, I think it makes Purdue so much more relevant, and so much of they just have more of a national brand now. I mean, they didn't have a national brand 3 years ago before he showed up there. And now, I mean, you're getting to the point where there's a team that runs the fun offense. They, you know, they can have multiple quarterbacks. They've got Rondale Moore, who everybody knows about already. And I think that he's got a good situation going there, and he kind of wants to see it through.
What I was going to ask you, Connor, about the Big Ten West, last year was kind of an uncharacteristic year. I know Dave had mentioned in the past how a lot of times it's been Wisconsin and everybody else. But you had Northwestern. Pat Fitzgerald's done such a solid job at his alma mater. But do you anticipate Wisconsin being right there in the running for the West this year? Of course, they have Jonathan Taylor, the running back, that a lot of people are anticipating being a Heisman Trophy candidate.
Yeah, I think Wisconsin will kind of return to form a little bit this year. And, you know, last year I was on record saying I had more confidence in Wisconsin than Ohio State. And Wisconsin was a preseason playoff team for me last year, and, you know, it was disappointing. It really was. And part of that was because of injuries, and part of that was just horrible quarterback play. And when you're not able to stretch the field that way, there's only so much you can do. And, you know, credit a back like Jonathan Taylor, who still amazingly enough improved his rushing totals from year one to year two. He's a preseason Heisman Trophy contender. The thing I want to see with him is the ball protection. I mean, he has put the ball on the ground way too much in his career. That's the only thing that's preventing me from saying he's the top back in America. I'd probably rather have Travis Etienne over him, just for that simple fact of, you know, if you're going to do that, you know, you can't be considered the best at your position, in my opinion. So I think Wisconsin's going to be interesting with a new quarterback. Are they going to finally get that game changer in Graham Mertz? Is this going to be a team that can take that next step and get back to what they were at, you know, in 2017, where, you know, they're going to consecutive New Year's Six Bowls and you're feeling good about where that program is? And, you know, I think last year was just kind of a punch to the gut a little bit. But the good thing is, you know, you do have Jonathan Taylor coming back, and you're able to keep an impressive young coordinator in Jim Leonard, somebody who is going to have some big-time opportunities ahead. So if I'm Wisconsin, I still feel pretty good about my situation, and like I should be in the driver's seat to win that division, though it's not going to be easy.
I had one more question for you as far as the Big Ten. One of my questions is, God rest his soul, the original co-host of this podcast, Dave Shepard, went to Illinois there in Champaign. He laughed at that. He was obviously a huge Bears fan. He said there were a lot of alums there that he had talked to that was not happy with the Lovie Smith hire. Do you think that will he survive another year? A lot of people, I saw the prediction from 24/7. I think they said 4-8 for the regular season. But what are your thoughts on Illinois?
As somebody who grew up a Bears fan as well in the suburbs of Chicago, rooting for Lovie Smith's Bears, I have seen all sorts of Lovie. Rex is our quarterback. That was, you know, I've been hearing those words for a very long time. So plenty familiar with Lovie and the job that he took on. The issue for me is that, look, Josh Whitman hired Lovie Smith a few months after he got on board there as athletic director, and he made the controversial decision, I think it was like in March, to go with Lovie. And, you know, he said, Bill Cubitt, you know, I appreciate what you did as the interim guy taking over for Tim Beckman, but, you know, I gotta take a chance here. And Lovie Smith was his big gamble, and he has put a lot of money into this, you know, commitment that he's made to Lovie. And I have a tough time saying that Josh Whitman is going to look at Lovie and say, you're gone after this year, if they don't, you know, get to a bowl game or something like that, just because that first year with Lovie where they, you know, he missed out on the recruiting cycle, they were calling that year zero. He has done a lot of things to make you believe that he's going to have all the patience in the world with Lovie. Having said that, I am not of the belief that Illinois is making it to a bowl game this year. I still think that with the quarterback situation is such a complete and total mystery, it's hard for me to put that much faith into this group when, you know, they've just been smacked in the face repeatedly in conference play the last few years. And, you know, even last year I went down to Tampa and I saw them play against USF and I was like, what in the world is this team doing? Like, why, you know, why is this team just getting absolutely destroyed by a group of five team, you know, back in 2017? And it's tough for me to envision a scenario where they make that big leap. But at the same time, I think the more likely scenario is Lovie walks away than Josh Whitman fires him. I think Lovie, there's a scenario in which Lovie could realize, hey, like, this is, I bit off more than I could chew. This is a tougher job than I realized at the time. And I don't need this at this point in my life, this point in my career, and I'm just going to hang it up and I'll pass it on to somebody else. But I don't think Josh Whitman is in a hurry to fire him unless things go really, really south this year.
Let's move on to the SEC. I know, Bubba, we talked earlier this morning about the different ones. I want to start off with a team that I was surprised. I listened, obviously, to SiriusXM and ESPNU Radio, and I'm hearing a lot of people big on LSU this year with Coach Ogeron. I just want to get your thoughts on that. They really liked them, the Tigers, this year.
Yeah, I'm high on LSU as well. I mean, I remember, you know, going into last year, everybody was saying, you know, Coach O on the hot seat, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then he handles that schedule that looked brutal. He handled it super well. And the thought was, if he could just get through 2018, if he could survive 2018, he is set up really, really well for success in 2019, because you knew Joe Burrow was going to have another year of eligibility, obviously. And what they did in going out and hiring somebody like John Brady to run this RPO type system with Joe Burrow, I think it's going to yield some great results for that offense. I wouldn't be surprised if that offense, which struggled at times last year, is a top 20 group this year, because I think last year, during the middle of the season, what people kind of dismissed with LSU was, okay, so they lose two quarterbacks before the start of the season, and they lose them via transfer. They didn't sign a quarterback in that 2018 class. Joe Burrow shows up as a summer enrollee, and Miles Brennan, the backup quarterback, was banged up for most of the season. And when you have a quarterback in that situation, and when your tackle situation's not very good, and you don't really have a lot of confidence in that, you can't really do a whole lot with your starting quarterback. You really need to protect him. There's only so much that you could do. And I think Steve Ensminger was handcuffed at times. And I think that there was only so much he could do when he wanted to be able to roll out Joe Burrow. He wanted to be able to use him as a runner, much like he was able to do finally at the end of the season, especially against Texas A&M. So I am high on the Tigers for a variety of reasons, that being one of them. I'm a big Joe Burrow believer. I think he has complete and total control of that locker room. And I just think that Coach O is super underrated right now. I think people are dismissing the fact that he has 10 top 25 wins since he took over for Les Miles back in 2016. And I think that people tend to look at the Alabama thing and they kind of say, all right, well, if LSU can't do that, then really what are we doing here? But to me, I think the guy has been super, super successful. I like the fact that he was able to retain his staff and really add to it in getting a guy like Brady. So, yeah, I am high on the Tigers this year. I think that I'll be having him probably around top 16, top 17 to start the year.
One question I had too is the next team I wanted to ask about is you mentioned it with Alabama. It's funny because several years ago I heard where Coach Saban and his wife, in other words, instead of celebrating like a national championship, they were relieved that they won a national championship. Some of the fans I've heard has Saban lost his touch? He gets blown out in their eyes against Clemson. And I'm like, are you kidding me? There's a lot of people like myself with our alma mater with East Carolina. We would love to be in Saban's position of having several national championships at this point. How do you feel about Alabama this year? Are there too many people in the panic room for Alabama?
Oh, no doubt. There's no doubt about it. And I'm not even of the belief that Dabo has passed up Saban. I think we tend to look at these things in college football with such a linear perspective. And to me, that's absolutely wrong. And the stat that shows that that's wrong is the fact that Saban, when he has returned to college from, when he's returned to his team coming off of a bowl loss, in those five instances, he has won a national title four of those years. So if this thing is linear, as everybody says it is, then it's not going to matter that Clemson just lost three first-round defensive linemen, and Clemson's just going to continue to dominate. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I look at this rivalry and what it's been the last 4 years, and it's 2-2. They've exchanged blows. It's a heavyweight fight. It's been fun seeing them go back and forth. And this year is going to be an interesting year, of course, with Tua and Trevor Lawrence back. But I think to look at Alabama as saying that it's been passed up is ridiculous because they just delivered one of the best regular seasons that we've ever seen in the history of college football. And I think that right now with what they return on offense, to have a guy like Tua back with all of those receivers, it's just setting up for another big year for them. And it's tough to look at that schedule in the regular season and say, oh, yeah, they're going to lose two games and miss out on an SEC championship. It's playoff or bust as usual for them. And, maybe a team like Georgia and the SEC championship could trip them up. But before then, I don't know. I wouldn't be looking at that schedule being very scared if I'm an Alabama fan. And I'd feel like, everything is set up for them to have another national championship run just because that's usually the way that Saban reacts when he doesn't win at all.
Yeah, he may be getting like 1 hour sleep right now.
Right.
Connor, you mentioned Georgia, and Georgia has obviously been so good under Kirby Smart, has been right there the last two seasons, challenging Alabama first the national title game, and then last year in the SEC title game, had that nice first half lead, but then Alabama came storming back in the second half and kept Georgia out of the football playoff, and then they had a somewhat surprising loss, even though they were obviously disappointed about not being in the playoffs and maybe drop that game to Texas in the bowl. But with what the Bulldogs returned this year, a very solid offensive line and Swift at running back, Jake Fromm, an experienced third-year starter at quarterback, do you really think they're the team to beat in the East for sure? And then what, Florida is the primary challenger under Dan Mullen?
Right. Yeah, and I think that you just look at what Georgia's done against the division the last 2 years. They haven't won a division game by less than 14 points in each of the last 2 years. I mean, that's how dominant they've really been in the SEC East. And right now, I don't think there's anybody on Georgia's level, and that includes Florida. And I know that Florida has been looked at as this next challenger, next team up. But, Florida went 3-3 against the division last year, and in five of their six games in the division, they were trailing in the fourth quarter. So, to me, what Georgia has done is distanced itself so well, and I think that this year is super interesting just with having a much different quarterback room than what we thought. And the fact that this is likely going to be Jake Fromm's last year, we assume it's going to be in DeAndre Swift as well. We're not as worried about the running back situation down the road at Georgia because of all the depth that they have there with guys like Zamir White and James Cook. But there is a lot of pressure on this team to win a national championship this year. I mean, let's call it what it is. When you haven't won one since 1980, when you have a quarterback as good as Jake Fromm, when you've been on the cusp and just right there, there is a lot of Georgia fans who want to see Kirby take that next step and show, hey, look, this isn't just Mark Richt 2.0. I've got to be able to deliver on a season like this when you have this much talent and when the division is just seems like it's absolutely yours and you have such a favorable path to get to a conference championship game. This is the type of year that you need to be able to deliver one. And I think that right now, if I'm Georgia, I'm feeling really good about that. They have questions at receiver. They have questions on the defensive line. But
man, you got Jake Fromm back with that running game, that offensive line. This team should be able to do some very special things. And, you know, playoff is the beginning of those expectations if I'm a Georgia fan right now.
Connor, two teams that come to mind as far as speaking of expectations, with Tennessee and South Carolina, two great programs as far as when you think about, especially Tennessee with the coach, with Jeremy Pruitt. I like him, and I like the fan base, and I love their Neyland Stadium. And you look at Will Muschamp, and a lot of great people there in upstate Columbia, South Carolina. What do you think about those two teams? They seem to be where the fans' expectations are high, but yet if they go 8-4, 9-3, somewhere in that ballpark, it's a disappointing season.
Gosh, it's interesting, you know, because if I was going to bet on one team to improve its win total from 2018 to 2019, it's Tennessee. I mean, if we're sitting here at the end of the season and Tennessee isn't going to a bowl game, we're all stunned. I mean, we're like, what in the world is going on? The schedule is set up super, super well for them to be able to have a nice little improvement this year. It's a different story if you're South Carolina. South Carolina right now, you can make the argument, it has the toughest schedule in the country. And I think that there are people that look at the non-conference matchups against a team like Clemson, obviously. And, you know, you still have those tough crossover draws to be able to, you know, to have to face Alabama this year. You got to face Texas A&M. It's brutal right now. And the tough thing is that Will Muschamp, I believe it's 10 straight games against ranked opponents that he's lost. And that has always been his thing is, you know, he can't quite get that over the hump victory. And, you know, if you're South Carolina right now, I don't think that 2019 is the make or break year for Will Muschamp. I do think that it is 2020. I think that the situation that he's in with his current athletic director tends to yield a little bit more patience than we think of these things. But yeah, I mean, talk about two programs that are kind of viewed right now on the outset of going in opposite directions, right? Where South Carolina looks like at the beginning of last season, you know, everybody's talking about them. Can they overtake Georgia? Can they beat the dogs at home? And now the question is, man, is South Carolina going to be able to win seven games this year with that difficult schedule? Whereas Tennessee right now, I think that the hope is that they can get to that 8-win mark. So, yeah, two teams just in very different spots right now with their respective head coaches, one of which feels like you worry that you've seen the ceiling, and another, you hope that the ceiling is yet to come.
And, Connor, they also, Bubba knows this, our alma mater, East Carolina, they bought us out they were supposed to come to Greenville this year in 2019, so I guess they didn't want to lose to us. No, I'm just kidding. But we actually have to play Gardner Webb because they bought us out instead of coming to Greenville. For some reason, they don't want to come to Greenville anymore.
Yeah, that's weird. Why would they not want to come to Greenville? What's wrong with Greenville?
There's nothing wrong with it, but for some reason they want to just play it. They'll play us there in Columbia, but they won't play us in Greenville. So hopefully we have a great coach now in Mike Houston, so hopefully they'll want to play us again. Or maybe we win too many games, so they won't play us. I don't know, but it's just a strange – speaking of storylines for us for East Carolina, love South Carolina, have nothing personal against them, so hopefully they'll play us in Greenville.
Yeah, no, it's weird how these two-for-one seem to be playing out.
Yeah.
A lot of people have made a lot of that with UCF trying to get the two-for-one, or really turning down the two-for-one with Florida. But programs like South Florida have taken on the two-for-ones and said, you know what, we don't care. We'll do that as long as we get a home game hosting a big-time program. Like, hey, that's a win for us. They're going to get to host Alabama in a few years. And meanwhile, UCF is sticking its nose up saying, hey, you know, we're better than that. We think that we're, you know, we want to be treated like a Power 5 program. But, you know, as Group of 5 schools know all too well, that's just not the way that it works, even if you do have a couple of successful seasons.
One of the high-profile roster changes that you had is Kelly Bryant moving on from Clemson to Missouri, where he's going to be taking over for Drew Locke. So can you talk a little bit about that and maybe some other personnel changes that people might not be aware of?
Yeah, what an interesting little storyline that I feel like in years past this would have been like one of the big off-season storylines. Maybe you could make the argument that it is, but I just feel like with all the big-time transfers like Jalen Hurts and Justin Fields that Kelly Bryant has sort of become like the forgotten transfer, and part of that is because he went to Mizzou. And he had, I mean, you know, had he, I don't know, you know, necessarily in terms of the big time offers that were there, I mean, I think everybody was kind of holding out for Jalen Hurts or for Justin Fields. And I think that right now the situation that he's in at Mizzou is odd just because they still have this postseason ban. And you really don't know, you know, you saw early on where it's, you know, or when right after you found out about this postseason ban from the NCAA that Mizzou has this season, you know, for stuff that happened 5-6 years ago, Kelly Bryant comes out and says, yeah, I'm not going anywhere. And it's a weird little, you know, is this going to be this, like, rallying cry for this team? Because that's kind of what it feels like. The schedule sets up super, super well for Mizzou this year, unlike years past, where they can get off to a really nice start in the SEC and not actually start off with a 4-game losing streak in conference play. I think Kelly Bryant is in a good situation with Derek Dooley. It surprised a lot of people to see him go to Mizzou. But I wrote when he initially announced that he was leaving Clemson that I thought Mizzou was the wild card, and I thought that the system that Derek Dooley was going to run was going to fit him really well. And if he is trying to become an NFL quarterback, that's a good place to go. Somebody with pro experience, and you know, you look at what he did with Drew Locke. Obviously, that's going to bode well for him. So, yeah, I'm very interested to see what Kelly Bryant can do, and if this postseason ban can get lifted, or if Mizzou is going to have one of these like us against the world type seasons that we've seen from them in years past.
Something else I wanted to ask you about in the SEC West, is at Ole Miss. So you have what a coaching staff that Matt Luke has assembled going into year three. You have offense coordinator Rich Rodriguez, of course, from Arizona after everything that went down there. And then you have Mike McIntyre, the new defensive coordinator. So between the two coordinators, they're spending $2.4 million or more.
Yeah, bold move from Matt Luke. I mean, there are not a lot of coaches in the country, if any, who would have done something like that where he said, you know what, I've got two openings to fill on my staff, and I'm going to go out and get a couple of former Power 5 coaches, a couple of guys who, you know, probably like could very realistically be there for 1 year and leave because they want to get back into the coaching game. And I think that just shows you a lot about Matt Luke's awareness, understanding that this is his time to be able to show the school, like, hey, we don't have any postseason sanctions anymore. I need to be able to win, and I don't care who I can bring in to be able to do that, even though Rich Rod obviously had some of the character issues with his fallout at Arizona. So, yeah, it's strange because Ole Miss, all of a sudden, like, you know, the cloud has been lifted and all that stuff, but at the same time, you look at the talent that they just lost in the NFL draft, my goodness, that is not going to be easy to be able to replace that. They ranked dead last in FBS in returning of percentage, the percentage of returning offensive production. So, I mean, this is going to be an entirely new offense. I think Matt Corral is going to be running it. He's kind of this fun, exciting, wild card quarterback, but got all these new skill players around him. I know Scotty Phillips is one of the more underappreciated backs in the country, but, you know, this new element with Rich Rod in there and how they're going to be able to kind of, you know, figure out his offense and how much is it going to look like Matt Luke's offense? I don't know, but that is not an easy situation and not an easy division to try and turn that around in you know, this first year with those two guys on board. But I'll be very interested to see just kind of, you know, the adjustments that they're able to make and if they look like a much better team down the stretch with the postseason as a possibility for them.
And even if Rich Rod can work some magic, so to speak, there with that offense and match last year's production or get anywhere close to that where they're averaging 32, 33 points a ball game. Their defense was pretty bad, to say the least. Obviously, having a coordinator change, you would have expected that. But I watched them play some last year, and needless to say, the Landshark defense was nowhere to be found. They were giving up in the upper 30s.
Oh, it was disastrous. I mean, Ole Miss, its stance on tackling the last 2 years has been it doesn't believe in it. I mean, it's like it's against their religion or something. It's like it's unbelievable to watch. And, you know, Wesley McGriff's really struggled as the defensive coordinator there, where guys were just – I mean, they were just flat out of position all the time. And that's what guys have said early on so far, is we feel like with Mike McIntyre, we're just being put in much better spots to succeed. And that's the area that really needs to continue, because everybody was, you know, while we were so excited about this Ole Miss offense coming into last season, I said, look, like this team has a 7-win season. Or a 7-win ceiling. As long as you don't tackle, there's only so much you can do in the SEC, right? I mean, teams are just going to run all over you, and sure enough, that's what they did. So Mike McIntyre, somebody who is, you know, 3 years removed from being the AP Coach of the Year for what he did in 2016 season at Colorado, can he be the guy to turn that defense around? I don't know. It kind of remains to be seen. They do have a lot of nice pieces coming back on that side of the ball, a lot of production there. But I kind of, you know, need to see it before we really believe in it in order to think that this is going to be vastly different than what we've seen in the last couple of years.
Sticking on the West, that's what one of the programs that really needs to show some improvement is Arkansas. Chad Morris going 2-10 in year one, their only FBS win coming over Tulsa. They're 0-8 in the SEC after taking over for Brett Bielema. And their defense has led the way when Chad Morris is an offensive-minded coach. So how far is the offense going to be able to come along in year two, and what type of improvements do you see the Razorbacks making?
You know, it's really tough to look at what they did last year and think that they're just going to all of a sudden make this massive jump. I mean, it's two wins. They got smacked in the face at home by North Texas. I mean, it was ugly. And, you know, Chad Morris, while I liked the hire and I totally understood it, and Arkansas fans might have looked at it as a bit of a consolation prize because they didn't get Gus Malzahn on, but you know, you have to have a little bit of faith in this to know that it's going to take some time. I'm not of the belief that he's, you know, on the hot seat. He needs to win this year in order for, you know, him to survive, like, you know, barring some disaster, as we always say. But the schedule is still very favorable for him, at least in non-conference play. I mean, their non-conference schedule is an absolute joke. Let's call it what it is. It is horrendous. And the fact that you're going to have a two-win team, you know, coming off of, you know, such a bad year offensively where they just couldn't find a quarterback, all year. And now it's going to be a completely different story. You bring in a grad transfer from SMU, somebody that Chad Morris has worked with, and Sam Hicks, and then you're trying to also get Nick Starkel ready to go, somebody who I liked a lot at Texas A&M and thought he was going to be the Aggies' opening day starter last year. You know, but the issue with him is learning the offense. He still has 2 years of eligibility left, so that's the good thing. But you know, what is this offense going to look like? You know, can Trey Knox be one of these game-changing dudes that team really needs? I don't know. I like Rakeem Boyd a lot, their tailback, too, as well. I think that they have some nice skill players there, but there was such a big transformation that Chad Morris needed to do with that offense. It was that entire offense was just built a completely different way under Brett Bielema, and now he's trying to transform it in year two. I still think that there are some very tough times ahead for that group, and I wouldn't be surprised if they miss the postseason again.
And then you have Texas A&M. Texas A&M is a team that showed tremendous improvement last year under Jimbo Fisher, even though the record didn't necessarily reflect it. They have an extremely difficult schedule this year. And so I've seen a lot of people saying, well, I think they're going to be even better, but the record's not going to necessarily reflect it. Do you think it's going to be maybe Texas A&M or Mississippi State or maybe even Auburn? Who do you think is going to be those primary challengers along with LSU in the West?
You know, I would still tend to think that it is going to be A&M. And I know that the schedule, it's brutal. I mean, it's really tough. And that's why I look at 2020 is the year that kind of makes a little bit more sense, especially if Kellen Mond comes back too, because I like him a lot. I think he's the third best quarterback in the SEC. And I, you know, I questioned why Jimbo Fisher wanted to go with him to start last year when he was just, I mean, he looked like a freshman under Kevin Sumlin. I mean, it was bad in 2017, and he looks like a completely different player. The fact that he can stretch the field so much, he can take off with his legs, you know, he's a guy who, you know, can stand there and take a hit too. I really like what he brings to that offense. The thing that gives me a little bit of trepidation early on with some of the, especially with how good their schedule is Trevion Williams had one of the more underrated seasons that we've had in the SEC, where the guy had 2,000 yards from scrimmage, and you know, I don't really feel like he got a whole lot of national love. And Jay Sternberger, the tight end who was really one and done at Texas A&M, was so good for them. But the good news is Kellen Mond has a great set of receivers returning. I think they got a lot of nice playmakers on the outside for him to throw to. And then the fact that Jimbo Fisher was able to keep Mike Elko. I love Mike Elko. I think the defensive coordinator there is going to have a Power 5 job very, very soon. I think that what he was able to do in transforming that run defense last year was really important, and I think that that's going to allow them to kind of survive and hang with some of these really, really good teams that are on the schedule.
Something I wanted to point out about Mississippi State. At Mississippi State, you have Joe Moorhead going into his second season after Dan Mullen had moved on to Florida. And not a bad first year, and the Bulldogs won 8 games, but in 4 out of their 5 losses, which came against some of the top teams on their schedule, like Kentucky, Florida, LSU, and Bama. and they really struggled offensively, scoring a combined 16 points in those four games. And those teams, or those games, I should say, were on the front half of their schedule last year, so that's something to keep in mind as well. But what do you think about the Bulldogs going into year two of Joe Moorhead?
So if there was a Joe Moorhead fan club, I'd be driving the bus. I am that guy. I predicted Mississippi State was going to win 10 games last year. That obviously didn't happen, but I'm doubling down on Joe. I'm not saying that they're going to win 10 games necessarily, but I just think that he is such a good offensive mind, and when he really gets his guys and his system in there, I think that program is really going to take off, especially on that side of the ball. I think it's tough to forecast going into this year when you don't know what the quarterback situation is necessarily going to be. You thought you had a pretty good idea, like Keaton Thompson was going to be the guy, and then, oh, wait, Joe Moorhead decides, you know what, I'm going to bring in Tommy Stevens, the guy that I worked with at Penn State, somebody who almost beat out Trace McSorley for the starting job back in 2016. People might forget that, but, you know, it's hard to look at that team and really forecast just how good they're going to be. I think eight wins in the regular season should be the floor for that program. I think that, you know, defensively, when you lose two players as good as Jeffrey Simmons and Montez Sweat, who are just once-in-a-generation type players at Mississippi State, I think that it's difficult to kind of – you need to see just how their loss impacts that defense. They still have a lot of talent at linebacker. I like Errol Thompson a lot. And I think that they're going to be able to be good defensively, but not nearly as good as they were last year when they were, what, second in the country in scoring defense. So I would tend to think more of the 8-9 win range for Mississippi State. I'm not quite as high, but I do think that they are going to make some offensive improvements this year.
So in Atlanta, when it's all said and done for the SEC championship, do you go Georgia in the East and Alabama in the West?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done my official predictions. That'd be where I'd lean right now. I may, and I'm not, this isn't a guarantee, I may just have Georgia winning the SEC championship and Bama still getting to the playoff. That's a little sneak preview there. I'm not necessarily 100% committed to that, but, yeah, if I'm predicting it right now, I can't deviate from that. I just can't. I think that both of those teams, especially when they have, you know, when you consider that they have their starting quarterbacks back, two of the best five quarterbacks in the country, in my opinion. I think that makes a big difference with how we project these teams moving forward. So, yeah, it's boring, but give me Georgia and Bama in the SEC championship for now, subject to change, and maybe, just maybe, all of Georgia winning that game.
And it looks like you until other people rise up and beat them, then we pretty much have to go with the safe bet, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. Bama, like I said, Bama just put together one of the most dominant regular seasons we've ever seen. I mean, even, you know, when Tua was banged up down the stretch, like, I don't think it can be ignored, and we're going to tend to forget about that just because of how ugly the Clemson loss was. But, like, I mean, they ran through the SEC. That was unbelievable. And, yeah, they had the close game, obviously, in the SEC championship against Georgia. But at the same time, what they did in the regular season, even what they did, you know, going to Death Valley like that and pitching a shutout, to me, you can't forget about something like that. And with basically that entire, you know, those skill players back, I think it's going to be fun to see what they can do again. And I can't pick against Bama right now.
For the national championship, you say Clemson and Alabama, if we're going to go with safe bets again this year?
You know what? This is early, and like I said, this is subject to change. I need to dig a little bit deeper into this. What about Clemson, Georgia right now? Is it? I mean, I think that's maybe the direction that I would go. I just think that there's that sense of urgency is there right now with Georgia, and I think that they – maybe that this is the year that they put it all together. And, you know, I would tend to think that those two teams would have as favorable of a shot to make the playoff as any. I think they have the best two paths to get to the playoff of any team in the country, and that includes Alabama just because of how difficult that division is. But yeah, I mean, I guess that is a little bit bold to say Clemson in Georgia, but right now, just with what those two programs are building and how much depth that they have and the way that they've been recruiting. Yeah. Give me Clemson and Georgia in the national championship, pending though. Maybe you might have to get back to me on that, you know, when August rolls around.
You already hear, folks. You're already here in June, folks. Connor says, Georgia and Clemson. I love it. I love it. I love bold predictions for sure. And I know Bubba is so far away, but certainly we enjoyed having you, Connor. Before we let you go, I know, Bubba, we want to make sure that we plug his stuff and appreciate the time because it's been fun, especially in June. It's hot right now, but we're still thinking football.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me. Any, you know, all of our stuff, we're still cranking out tons of off-season content over on SaturdayDownSouth.com, SaturdayTradition.com. Yeah, make sure you give us a follow on Twitter, at SDS, at Tradition, and you'll find all of our good stuff. We'll be college football's, you know, 24/7, 365, right?
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
And, Connor, what's the easiest way to check out your podcast?
Yeah, so on Twitter, we're at the SDS Pod. Subscribe to us on iTunes, the Saturday Down South podcast. I host it with Chris Marler. We have a lot of fun with it. Keep it pretty light and loose just because, you know, that's can't take yourself too seriously in the SEC, right? You got to be able to have a little bit of fun. So, yeah, if you want to subscribe to that, we definitely appreciate that. And, look forward to, as you guys do, just talking college football year round.
Well, Connor, appreciate it very much. I know Bubba and I appreciate it. And Kyle, our other co-host, is working for a living. So we actually had the day off where I could participate as well. Thank you so much. We look forward to having you back on this summer right before the season starts.
Yep, sounds good. Appreciate it, guys. We'll do it soon.
Thank you very much, Connor. Appreciate you very much for all that you do. Connor, thank you very much. And that was a great preview of the Big Ten and SEC. So one thing you'll learn this year, we'll have our previews again of all the different conferences. The good news is that it'll be they won't be jam-packed, and we were starting our new guest team in July of last year, so we got a little bit of a leg up this year, and great stuff there. Before we go, guys, I know that we've got a lot of stuff coming up. Do you want to talk about promo some stuff?
Yeah, on our next podcast, we'll be catching up on the first appearance from Chris Phillips with the Spurs Up Show. He obviously covers the South Carolina Gamecocks, and we'll, in addition to talking about the Gamecocks, we'll talk about the SEC as a whole. So looking forward to that chat with Chris. He does a great job covering South Carolina.
Also looking forward to something we have this summer for SoundCloud. Bubba, the 50 days, 50 great pirates, right?
Yeah, mid-July, July 12th to be exact. So going from July 12th up until the before game day, August 30th, we will have 50 days, 50 pirates, and so we'll catch up with some of the best players in East Carolina football history, including the likes of Shane Carden.
And Kyle, I know that you and I came up with the idea for the watch party. We're going to start that for this summer as well. 6 great episodes, and appreciate you and I working together on that last year, and we had so much going on that we had to table it for this year, but that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Talked about it last year, going to do it this year. So it should be a cool idea. It's a cool idea. Hopefully it'll come off well.
I think it will. You know, one thing we've got to do, guys, is we got to make sure that we have we got to be ready for it. We got a huge idea that we're going to launch. We'll talk about that next month, but it's going to be exciting for Pirate Nation if you love football, right, Bub and Kyle?
Yeah. If you tease it right now. If you love football, you should like this idea.
Another upcoming guest that I failed to mention, Dave, is last summer and fall we caught up with Peter Burns from the SEC Network. Does a great job hosting College Football Live and some of their other programming. Talk about college football, so we'll have Peter Burns on the show to talk a little SEC, but then also the national picture.
It's going to be great stuff there, and we also were finalizing, if you have not heard, we're finalizing our pirate cruise. So the travel agent, Dana is her name, and she and I are going to finalize stuff, and so we have an idea. We know it's going to be Charleston to the Bahamas, so we're working on the itinerary and all that kind of stuff, and we'll be having her on the show pretty soon so we can go ahead and get the dates out, and that's going to be a lot of fun. And Kyle, I'm hoping you and Bubba can go. I know that you expressed some interest. Don't you think it'll be cool?
Yeah, it's a cool idea. I've talked to Jessica about it. Hopefully we will be a part of the pirate cruise next summer.
That'll be a lot of fun. So Charleston to the Bahamas on Carnival, we do know that. And we're deciding on 4 or 5 days. We're trying to keep the prices, obviously, where We're middle class folks, so we're trying to keep it. We're as many Pirate fans and Pirate Nation can go, because we're Pirates and that's what it's all about. So Pirate beverages, great food, great entertainment. It's going to be a lot of fun. If you've never been on a cruise, then come on our cruise. It's going to be awesome. I can just tell you that. We'll have a private party. We may have a podcast on there. We're working that out with folks at Carnival. So a lot of fun stuff. We'll have that for sure. And I know, Kyle, you'll be in the casino, right?
Absolutely. Playing some slots.
I think and Bubba's going to be around the outdoor track and shoot basketball on the top.
Yeah, that's what I'm sure. I'll certainly do that, and Kyle will be getting ready to increase that pocketbook so he can make a bigger down payment on that indoor practice facility.
Absolutely,
that's right. It's supposed to be the Kyle from Grange Barber. That's right, indoor practice facility. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's I'm all over that. I'm having my accountant crunch the numbers as we speak.
All right, then, Bubba, how can people find us on social media?
So follow us on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at TheSportsObjective. Like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. All of our podcasts are going up on YouTube now, so that's, a lot of people have been listening that way. So definitely be sure to check out YouTube if that's an easier way for you to listen. You can also listen on TuneIn Radio, which is a great way. A lot of great pirate-themed shows or pirate content with 94.3 Pirate Radio, also the Pirate IMG. So in addition to those, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, SoundCloud, if you find podcasts there, you can probably find us.
We added radio.com a couple weeks ago, and by the way, we actually have another one that's going to come in the next few days. Kyle, it's a podcast player called Himalaya I found out about, so we're going to be on there as well. So I don't know that there's if there are places out there we don't know about, it's few and far between, because we've worked really hard, all three of us, on getting on different platforms to make sure if you're a pirate, you love talking pirate football, sports, then definitely you can find the Sports Objective. All right, guys, do you guys have any final thoughts before we go?
Not really.
All right.
Go Pirates.
All right, sounds good. How about you, Bubba?
No, I really don't have anything. Just hopefully with some of the content we're putting out there, that will make the next 2.5 months go by a little quicker for you. Obviously, enjoy the summertime with your family, but Pirate football will be here before you know it.
It definitely will, and stay tuned for more exciting things to come as we bring you. And until next time, I'm Dave Richmond, and you've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.